We have Dolly herself. That didn't sound good on the telephone right there. Maybe I better get to it right now. So let me hold off on any long introductions and just say that we have with us on the phone three-time Tony Award winner and Broadway legend, Carol Channing. Carol, are you... Oh, I think someone is calling in because... Well, hello, Carol. Well, I'm thrilled to hear you, and we can hear you, too. How are you doing? How do you feel? How are you doing, Carol Channing?
I'm doing fine.
And you are better. I mean, one of the things, you know, my wife is a gerontologist, and she, a few years... I'm sorry?
Your wife's name.
Oh, her name is Joyce.
Joyce, yes. Tell me about Joyce.
Okay. Well, my lovely and wonderful wife, Joyce, is a professor at the University of Northern Colorado, and she specializes...
Yes. Yeah, professor of what?
Gerontology. She teaches about aging. So, one of the things...
Oh.
Yeah. One of the things... Well, but here's an interesting...
Joyce is...
Yeah.
She's a professor of aging, whatever, or something. Yeah. What was he doing about so many years without our call? Well, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but what I was...
going to meet her, I hope.
Oh, well, if we can get down to CSU, yes, we would love to see you there.
Yes.
Well, what I was going to mention is the fact that she is a professor, and before she was doing that, she was working on studies that involved hip fracture. And the old thinking about people who hurt themselves or fractured their hips was that, well, if they were old, it was over. That was kind of like the last thing. They would break the hip and they would go rapidly downhill and, you know, nuts and circle the drain.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's what I did twice. We called 9, Harry called 911. Don't do that, because the whole town comes. Everybody comes, the whole, in the gesto. I fell down from the brick stairway in the backyard.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, so then everybody came, and they all, and it was sort of a tea party they had, and I don't know, some kind of a thing, and so then they kind of, oh, anyway, I've got to talk to Joyce about it, and then I fell down again, because it was the wrong job. I was just standing in front of the refrigerator, and broke whatever it was where the police took me. So the fire department came, the police department,
the paramedics
came, everything. Oh, it was just lovely to have the whole town trailing us to the hospital.
Yeah.
And all concerned people, oh, they were so nice in the gesto. That was very kind. But I broke the femur bone.
Ow.
So now I've got a new one, and it's terrific.
What is it made out of?
It's great. A new femur bone, and it goes from the ribs down to the ankle or something, yes. Oh, it's marvelous. And I was just about to take my walk.
Oh, yeah.
And then I found out I didn't talk to Dave yet.
Well, actually, you even get to talk to Joyce. She's here. This is my wife, Joyce Carol Chang, and Carol Chang and Joyce.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Carol.
I can't wait to meet you, Joyce. You teach all about aging.
I do. And did you have any rehabilitation after your hip surgery? Did you go through a little physical therapy?
Oh, yes. Well, I finally got to the top of the mountain here in Modesto, Rancho Mirage, California. And I had a fit. What do you call Lance? What was he?
A therapist.
I had a therapist, and we got to the top of the mountain, and then we got down again, and that's what we're doing, and it's working.
And you know what's interesting, Carol? I don't have any titanium or anything like that, but I had an aunt who had a titanium knee or metal knee, and she would say in the cold weather she would feel it. She'd get cold. Do you feel cold in your...
That's what I do. I get cold.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Oh, you're cold all the time.
the great Broadway legends, and we're talking about titanium knees.
Well, Carol, let me just say this. All morning, all of our neighbors have been singing Hello, Dolly, and trying to emulate your voice so people would stop their cars and begin singing Hello, Dolly. So it was quite unusual here on a Saturday morning.
Oh, Joyce, I'm glad that was how wonderful was it for me.
Oh, would you do it, hon? Can we hear your Carol Channing?
No. David has been practicing.
He's been
with gestures and movement, and he's been telling everyone about this interview for weeks.
Yeah. Oh, well, of course, I'm thrilled. Yeah.
We're sure to get arts back into public schools, and one art is teaching people how to stay young and active and healthy, and that's an art. And I found out after, I did Hello, Dolly for over a span of 30 years, which is some kind of a record.
Wow.
And I found, boy, you could...
5,000.
Oh, yes, I did over 5,000 performances. Yul Brynner was touring at the same time. We were neck and neck on Broadway with the King and I. And then we would meet in airports when we went on tour. And he was my dear friend. And he said, he was facing his 5,000th performance. And he said, look, if you ever... performances, don't tell anyone, will you? And I said, oh, you were friends. Of course I won't do that to you. But now the poor man is gone, so I can tell you we were way over 5,000 performances.
Carol,
I'm proud of that, and I got healthier and better all the time.
Can I ask you, what would be your advice to other people? Because that's a tremendous, longevity, and you have a lot of stamina. So what's your secret?
The secret is something the Board of Education doesn't seem to understand. They keep firing all the art teachers. Creative work. Keep it up. Study. Get the arts study. Do you know the arts swing you into every kind of work there is? It's the strangest thing. Fathers often, it sounds right, just as son, I want you to be able to support your family. Just take the 3 R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and just take that, and then be able to support your family. And they cut, don't bother with the arts, and they're not the ones who get the jobs. The ones who get the jobs and do creative work are the ones that have studied the arts in school. They're thrilled with what they can create and what they can do. And the ones that get the jobs are just, they're the ones that do all, they get in there and they do good jobs.
Well, can I ask you?
It's very interesting, and it's a fact. So, you can't cut the arts and be successful.
Well, can I ask you, you have a foundation. Is that connected to the keeping teachers and art teachers going? Is that what your foundation is?
Oh, yes. We do have the foundation. Harry, will you come back here? Anyway, we have a foundation for studying the arts. And you know what? A truck driver wrote a song for me. I harangued him. I said, do you want your children to grow up bored stiff with school? Our grades, I met Harry when I was 12 and he was 13, middle school. And our grades went steadily up in that. So he said, I'm going to write a song for you. And he doesn't usually write songs. And can I sing it for you?
Please.
Yay.
Please.
Well, it's called The Show Must Go On. And it goes, the show must go on. Make sure the marquee's lit. The show must go on. Don't let the spotlight hit. The future's at stake. Our school's now impressed. Just give kids the chance. And you'll see one day their skills will advance. Move over. Make way. The arts must keep their place in education. The show must go on. Come must go on. The children count on us. The curtain must rise. So strike up the chorus. Yes, it's a fact you'll find. The arts expand the mind. In science, history, English, math, biology, geology, and even sociology, psychology, mythology, also genealogy, pomposity, verbosity. I'm losing my velocity, but let's keep the arts alive. Let's keep young hearts alive, because the show must go on. That's what he wrote me, and it tells you the whole story.
Oh, my goodness. Well, well done, Harry. You know, Harry Collision, by the way, is Carol Channing's husband, someone she has known since she, as you said, you were about 12 or 13 years old.
Wow.
But they didn't get married yet. Well, certainly not at that age. But you had to go through three husbands to get to Harry, in a manner of speaking.
That's right. And now we got married 7 years ago. Harry has a... She's now my seven-year-old daughter. She's actually in her 50s.
Oh, okay.
And, yes, but she's my seven-year-old daughter, and boy, she helps with this. She's smart as a whip, and she went, Harry, where the heck did you go? Yes, girl.
Oh, well, Harry, tell me something.
You have...
Yeah, sorry.
Joyce, yes. Okay, I can't find him. Bye-bye,
oh.
Harry.
I hear him.
Oh, you hear him, yes. You have a foundation, you and I.
Can you just hold the telephone back a little bit further from you?
Oh, am I yelling?
No, you're great. We're fine. You sound wonderful, both of you.
I always yell. All right, there. Is that more than like...
That actually sounds...
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Well, listen, the only thing I can say is that Carol and I met when we were very young. We were exposed to the arts in school, in our middle school in San Francisco, at Aptus, actually, and that's what molded us. But you asked a very poignant question when you said, are you trying to get teachers, art teachers back in school? Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a qualified yes. What we're trying to do is, right now, is to bring arts back into public schools. Because we there's a guy here in California, he's an assemblyman in our state assembly legislature, and he's trying to remove arts from public school. So I asked for some funds that we might get some teachers who might teach in those school districts in the United States. Probably Colorado doesn't have them as much as some of the larger cities. In like this, such as New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco, mm-hmm. where they really have poverty, a great deal of poverty, a great deal of social problem, mm-hmm. and we get those school districts attended to first. I think that's the only funds that we're really trying to get at. But there's a resolution in the United States Congress right now. It's a Senate Bill 275. A congresswoman was inspired by Carol. She introduced it into the House of Representatives.
Jackie Speier, a great lady.
And Jackie Speier. And now it's in the Senate. And when we're hoping to get that passed, it will celebrate the arts and education annually, the second September of each year. And more than that,
she got almost a 100% vote in the House of Representatives, and now it's on its way. Is it next week, Harry?
Boy, we don't know, Carol.
Oh, we don't know.
The main thing is, Carol is also launching a national telethon of foundations who join with Carol's foundation, partnership with foundation. In fact, we were in Denver not too long ago, just a matter of a month or two ago, when the National PTA met there, and we're partnering with the National PTA to find those school districts that need the most help immediately. But this telethon will be able to show the nation our kids, our children,
uh-huh.
who are doing great stuff when you give them the chance, when you give them the tools. They're capable of doing wonderful. We've probably got the most imaginative children and young people in the world.
Well, Harry's and my grades went steadily up in math, art and things that don't relate to the arts at all, human biology, all that. Our grades went up, and Harry won the medal for the best all-around student and the best and the finest athlete. He was center on the soccer team.
Let me ask you a question.
And, oh, and the next year I graduated, and I won the same medal. I'm not one of those smart ass people, you know. I'm not.
No.
But my grades just kept going steadily up.
Oh, we did. Now we've got there's a reversal. We have to reverse this trend of this country in education. Our legislators, our educators are not doing the kind of job we would expect them to do, and not really supporting the arts as they should. There are many who do, but many more who don't. And that's where our problem is. And hopefully Carol Channing will at least give it a kick start. And once we get it, it'll take on a life of its own.
Oh, yes. It'll go. Well, the second president of the United States, Adams, John Adams, said, thank God my sons, all of them, he must have had about four of them, and he said that they studied arts as they're exposed to the arts, they will excel in, they'll be creative in architecture, in all kinds of, they'll be able to support their families, they'll be active mentally, they'll be proud to, it changes you completely. It changed me. And Harry and I discovered poetry. And I talked to the Board of Education, the executives. It was Edna St. Vincent Millay. What of the wing that yearns to soar, the feet that plead to dance? Shall not a heart hope long and more to master circumstance? You, Board of Education, the executives of the Board of Education, you are the circumstance, and you can bring it back into public schools. It never occurred to them. They think it's superfluous. And Winston Churchill, Harry, am I talking too much?
No, you're great. I want to get a question in to Carol Channing and her husband, Harry Collegium. But Carol, I did read interview with you a couple of years ago that said that you have actually pretty conservative political views on the whole. So I'm a little surprised that you would be such a champion of arts in schools, because that tends to be more of a liberal Democrat kind of leaning.
I'm a champion of everything. Whoever recognizes creative work as being the essence of life, as Einstein said, they say, how did you discover? No, I agree with everybody. As long as they're creative. Albert Einstein said, no, I'm not smarter than my fellow physicists. I just stayed at it longer. And he said, he went to his laboratory, he said, I began to realize, I saw that Harry helped me.
Harry, there? Hello, Harry. Hello, Harry. Are you there?
What's the question?
He doesn't listen. You see, you've got to always keep your wife with you. I mean, they wander off all the time. Once I saw the infinite, I sensed the infinite harmony of the universe, I came back to my laboratory, and by gosh, he split the atom. I remember when I was a little girl, Einstein splits the atom on headlines in San Francisco, and he that's how he got. He sensed the infinite harmony, and he went to Princeton University, and they said, "Would you tell us how in the process that you discovered the theory of relativity?" And he said, "Well." And he opened up his violin case and said, "I'm going to do the same hour you invited me for. I'm going to play a violin solo, and maybe you'll begin to sense the creative energy in this world that all of us have latently." And he did a solid violin solo. I keep wondering how much Princeton University got out of that.
Well.
Oh.
Yeah, your cell phone is kind of breaking up a little. We can hear you, but I think you're...
Hearing?
Oh, that's better, right? Yeah.
Einstein's theory of relativity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what...
Can you hear
it? Einstein's theory of relativity. I couldn't explain it to you. It has to do with energy and mass or something like that.
Yes, that's right. I sense the infinite harmony of the universe, and suddenly, I realize that. What is it, Harriet? What's the matter with me?
There, go ahead. Now speak that way. Speak.
I won't touch it.
All right.
Okay. Is that where it goes through?
Yep.
Oh, I had it turned around backwards.
Oh, okay. Oh, that good. Now I think we should be all set. Mm-hmm. You okay? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I hear you well.
Oh, wonderful. You sound much better now. You there was something weird with the cell phone, so I'm glad you turned it around. Can I...
They won't let me hold it anymore. Where is Joyce? Did she want
to... Well, that happens in every marriage, Carol. I don't know what that means. So Joyce is still... Joyce has to take off, but she wants to say something to you.
No, I want to say thank you, Carol. It was great to chat with you. I'm just going to run, but thank you for spending time with David. I know he has a whole bunch of questions he's written down here, which I can't read.
I'll answer all of them, Joyce.
Oh, boy.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Oh, boy.
Well, here's my question. I remember also, like, 2 or 3 years ago, you were in a bank that had just been robbed. And I wanted to get that story. Whatever happened with that?
I can tell you.
Okay, go for it, Harry. Yeah.
Carol and I were going to the bank and to make a deposit or whatever. And when we got there, all the TV cameras were there, and they had the yellow ribbon blocking off everybody, you know. And so I guess robber had gone. He was disappeared from the scene. And so the TV cameras didn't have anything to report, and they saw Carol, they recognized Carol, and they said, Carol, they told her the story and so forth, and she says, well, did they take my money too? And
no, thank goodness, I think they didn't make away with every penny in the bank. I doubt that happened, but nobody was hurt or anything.
And so in any case, they did an interview while I had her, but that's the that was of no consequence as far as injury or anything else, Carol.
If you don't mind my asking a personal question, Harry, how old are you?
91.
Oh, so you're actually older. Oh my gosh.
I'm older than.
Because you sound.
He's older than I am. He won the honor, the great, the best pupil award. Yeah.
And what is it that makes a marriage go?
That was about 80 years ago. sure. We were only 13 and 12 when we met, and we went steady. And
that was my first love. Girls never forget their first love.
No, it's real little puppy. That's what it is. It's puppy love, but it's real little puppy.
But that's Harry.
Yeah. Next question. Baby's got questions.
Oh, questions.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to pick up on that, because what was it, were you not ready to commit all those years ago and then circle back into each other's lives? How come you didn't get married when you were 17 or something?
Well, I was immature, of course. I was very young, and I went off with some of my buddies. We went to a high school in Long Beach when we graduated from middle school, which is, I think, 1935. I was about 14 then, 14 and a half, something like that. And Carol went to Lowell High School, which is one of the great high schools in the nation. And then I came back to San Francisco, went to University of San Francisco, graduated, went into World War II from graduation. And Carol was back in Vermont. Vermont at Bennington College. So we never quite met. I never saw her again. That's a misnomer. I was recalled in the service during the Korean War, and we came around the Panama Canal on a big ship and docked in New York City. I had a night off, and so I was walking down the street, and I saw Carol was performing, I think it was Diamonds something.
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Yeah.
Never, yeah. I never saw her perform in my life, but I because I'd been married for 60 years before I lost my wife. And
she was a wonderful girl.
Yeah.
She's, I know that, and she doesn't want Harry to be alone.
But, you know, see, Carol, of course, is an artist. She's a great, great artist. I am not. I am, but I lived in arts. My whole home was in, as I said, I was in two wars, and I got to travel extensively, and I would pick up pieces of art that I loved, and so my home actually is really full of art. And I have a Hammond organ in the living room, and also a big Rogers organ, a big theater organ, and
two organs.
And you know, the arts do something to the human soul. It makes us more human, more outreach. And this hate. There's a hate going on in this country that's just debilitating our abilities to grow as a nation. Are we growing as a nation even though we, you know, are not doing the right things or the wrong things or whatever? And that's very negative. It's very, it puts you in reverse. You cannot foster love when you're fostering hate. And there's just too much of that. And art...
See, you have to be 91 years old to find that out.
Yeah, I have to be 91 to find that out.
Or 89 in Carol's case. So let me also ask, again, the fact that, Carol, you're still having a very, very busy schedule with all the things that you do. Do you think the fact that... I'm sorry?
Yeah, very, very good.
I went all over Los Angeles, and now we're back in Rancho Mirage.
Yeah.
Have you had to... Yeah, sorry.
And we're going this afternoon. There was a baboon. Carol did a show.
Max.
And my trainer still has Max. He's still alive. And he's receiving a star.
The fiercest animal in the jungle.
Yeah, Carol did a show. We're going to get the video of it.
So you're going to be there when Max the baboon gets his star.
Max the baboon.
Yes.
I don't have it yet. He's going to give me a movie of it.
And he's my friend. I just love him. I mean, he knew that. And he knows that, and he remembers me. I can't believe it.
So the monkey has now become this radio broadcast.
Yes, Max the baboon.
Max the baboon.
You know that.
It's interviews, trying to do one thing, and that's why we appreciate you, is we're trying only one thing, and it's, you know... This can't be done by one person or two people. This has to be done by a massive amount of people in the United States of America who understand, but they don't. The average person does not know the benefits received from an education in the arts.
They don't connect it. They're not. In other words, these are people who are watching wonderful television programs. They're watching... You know, Dance Like a Star, they're watching American Idol, and they appreciate all that. I mean, there's millions of people watching it, but do they connect it to the idea that, you know, you have to teach that in schools for people to be able to get on Dancing with the Stars or American Idol or to write TV shows or movies, you know?
Those school districts that have people who have good incomes can hire, and they do. They form their own foundation. They bring their own art teachers into the fold. But I'm talking about the average school that doesn't have the arts in it because of budget cutbacks.
Well,
and that's the first thing it goes.
Cut anything.
You want to cut something? Cut the art. Now they're cutting thousands and thousands of school teachers that teach the arts, and you know that's a specialty too.
Oh, yeah.
And when you take them out of the mix, you've damaged. You see, one thing I learned in the two wars I was in, pretty much in many, many countries in Asia and in Europe, and the thing I learned was that we're all alike. People are all alike. We have the same emotions. We laugh at the same things. We cry at the same things. You know, we're all alike. But arts the things that sustained most of these countries throughout the world. It's arts. Arts alone. Kids have it. Children have it.
When the Italians said, forget the Sistine Chapel, let's just have temporary pleasures, overeating, anything we want to do, forget all about it. That's when the fall of the Holy Roman Empire happened, and don't you believe it doesn't? It's the arts that give a country its character, as Winston Churchill said.
Absolutely.
Harry was in two wars. Winston Churchill was in the audience when the general said, we've got to cut everything in the British, when they didn't have any money. Every necessity. So we'll begin with the arts. And Winston Churchill stood up from the audience and said, then what are we fighting for?
That's exactly true.
Exactly. Well, and Joyce knows that. She's out teaching all this, exposing her students to this.
One of the greatest things, I think, for seniors today, seniors kind of give up in life after they get to be a certain age and they start to really deteriorate. That's when the deterioration progress really begins.
Otherwise, it's graffiti.
Yeah.
They want to express themselves, and they don't know how to do it, so they do it negatively. Hmm. And they become the worst. I talked to all the dropouts. Well, how many dropouts were they, Harry?
500.
And I
in
said,
one
Harry,
group. In one group.
In one group. Every color of the rainbow, I was scared to death. They were the most frightening-looking children. And I said, Harry, how am I going to reach them? What do I say? And he said, tell them your experience with your father. So my father was a lawyer, and he went to the legislature, and he came back home, opened the door, and said,
achievement.
And I thought, that must be better than anything in the world. And it is. It is. If you can achieve. And they started, do you know, they questioned, finally I reached them, and they sent the girls went back to school, and the boys, one boy, they said, what did you always want to be? This is the, what's the name of them? Anyway, this group.
Oh, the Job Corps.
Job Corps. They get them teachers, and to teach them the art of whatever it is they always wanted to do besides graffiti and scream and yell and say, I want to express what I feel, you know?
Well, let me ask Carol, when did you realize that you had an artistic nature, that you could sing, that you could perform? I mean, how old were you, and when did that hit?
I was 7 years old. I was in Commodore Sloth Grammar School in San Francisco, and somebody nominated me for secretary of the student body. It was my first time on stage, and we were electing next year's officers, school officers. And Bobby Schmaus, you don't know him, he nominated me for secretary of the student body. I went down the center aisle, as you're supposed to do if somebody thinks enough of you. And I never was on a stage before. Up the five steps, and I stood there and thought, what will I say? My knees were shaking. I was an only child. So as an only child, I brought people home with me in my imagination that I found exciting, wonderful, warm, that I was crazy about. And I was crazy about the principal of the school, Miss Berard. So I thought, I'll turn into Miss Berard. I'll do what I do best. I'll turn into somebody else. Hmm. And I said, apparently she was the forerunner of Julia Childs, and I said go to the polls and vote for Carol, and they all laughed. Go to the polls and vote for Carol, I said, as Miss Berard, and they all laughed, including Miss Berard. And Miss, I realized my first lesson in comedy. It was the first time I felt them coming toward me with warmth. And I thought, gee, I'm lifting their lives. And ever since then, I've been following my own, and that's to lift people's lives, to make them laugh, that's what I want on my tombstone. That's the first time. And I asked my father, I just adored her, and she knew it, and she knew there was no malice in imitating her. Mm-hmm. I found every excuse to go in her office, and she let me, and I watched how she walked and how she sat and everything, and I really, they believed it was Miss Berard sitting there, and I thought, oh my gosh, I can do this, and people need it. They need to laugh, these students, and they warm to it. And so nobody, I was naturally elected secretary, and nobody much minded whether the minutes were accurate or not, as long as they were entertaining.
And was your first audition for Abe Lastfogel, or had you been already doing other professional auditions before then?
I was at Bennington College in my second year when I auditioned for, we're supposed to get a job at whatever you're majoring in. Mm-hmm. So I went down to the William Morris office, asked to speak with the president, and by mistake, they let me go up there, and I did everything I ever thought was wonderful in the theater. And he said, anyway, I auditioned for the president, and do you know Abe Lastfogel? How did you know about that?
Well, I did a little bit of research, and it's in your autobiography, right? The a book called, remind me, what was it? Just Lucky, I guess, which was published in 2002. So, but please tell us. Yeah, please recount the story.
Oh, yeah. So then Abe Lastfogel said, I think I know where to send you. To Mark Blitzstein. He writes modern American operas, and I think you should, I'll send you over there and see what happens. And I went over, and am I skipping something?
No, you're good.
Okay, to Mark Blitzstein, who was writing modern American operas, the only one we knew of at the time, and he listened to me and he said, I've got a song for you, I'm going to write it, and he did. It's called I'm Fraught About You, and we laughed about everything. I mean, I'm fraught, simply fraught, utterly fraught with you. I've got you under my nails, between my teeth, around, about, above, and underneath. But with you, I am simply, utterly fraught. I'm caught, tense and taut, fairly distraught with you. And it was a satire on all the popular songs of the day, the love songs.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was parodying a certain kind of song there. And by the way, if people don't know who Mark Blitzstein is, he's probably best known for Cradle Will Rock. And if people know the movie that Tim Robbins did about that, he was the composer of that show. So, and so you did that song for the William Morris people.
Yes, and I got the job from Mark Blitzstein, and there was a one-sentence encouraging review from the main critic, what's his name? Anyway.
Virgil Thompson.
The music guy? Yeah. Virgil Thompson, the composer?
Yes, do you know him?
Well, I've heard of him, but wow, okay, yeah, that's, yeah, okay.
So he reviewed this thing, and he said, you may hear more about a satirical chanteuse named Carol Channing. At that one sentence, he picked me out from a whole cast, and I carried it on my person. I carried it in my for four solid years until I got another job. But Abe Lastfogel got me the next job.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, people might not realize this because Hello, Dolly seemed like such an extraordinary sensation when it hit Broadway. I mean, it's a wonderful show. The music is marvelous. But people might not realize it had a troubled out of town before it came here. What was that like being out of town with it, not knowing it would be the huge smash that it was?
Oh, we were sure it would be the smash. Gower championed it. Jerry Herman wrote the music, the words and the music, and he's going to win the award.
He won the Kennedy Award.
Oh, sure,
he won
yeah.
the Kennedy Award for this year. This year it took them that long to realize Jerry Herman was a great composer lyricist, and he and we found his find, the Hello Dolly. It was buried in Dolly's final speech to her dead husband Ephraim, and it said, "Ephraim, I'm going to rejoin the human race." And she said, "I want to rejoin the human race." And Ephraim, I want you to give me away. And she marries Vandergelder, comes down that wonderful stairway, and sings, and they all sing Hello, Dolly to her to have her back again.
See, this is, sorry, please continue.
Spine of the whole show, Hello, Dolly. But I found it, and Jerry Herman, and we discussed it, Jerry Herman and I, and he grabbed it and wrote that wonderful song.
I have to say, I was lucky enough to see you in the last Hello Dolly revival that you did on Broadway back in the mid-1990s. And I really sensed it there, probably because already you were not a particularly young woman anymore. And it was kind of, it was billed as your last tour. So when you were up there, I'm sorry?
Yes, how gently you put that.
well, who knew back then that you would live another 20, 30, 40, 50 years? I mean, back then we just like, oh, okay, let's go see Carol Channing because, you know, we won't get to see her do Dolly again. And it was so touching in a way, probably in a way that it wasn't back in the 1960s, because you were there and because you sensed this widow rejoining life. People don't realize that about Hello Dolly. It's about this woman who has kind of been kept to herself ever since she lost this wonderful husband. And when she goes back to the Harmonia Gardens and sees Harry and Louie, this is a major moment in her life again. It isn't just coming down a staircase, big deal. She is, you know, her heart is opening up again. It's a wonderful thing.
Oh, I love you for this. Thank you, dear.
Well,
oh, you really heard the message. Well, that's the spine of Hello Dolly. And some people don't know how to find the spine. But Konstantin Stanislavski teaches people in his book, and Richard Boleslavsky discovered this wonderful method of finding the spine. Everything has a spine, and it has to include every character in the show to rejoin the human race. That's the spine of Hello Dolly.
It really is. And did you fear? See, at first, I'll bet you were afraid that Lorelei in Diamonds Are and Gentlemen Prefer Blondes would typecast you. And then, of course, you got this other role of Dolly Levi. Were you afraid after 5,000-plus performances that everybody would just think of you as Dolly rather than Carol? Or that never was an issue?
I wasn't. Well, I'll tell you why. I was in before anything, I was in, well, naturally, I did 10 Broadway shows, bit parts, understudying Eve Arden in Danny Kaye's first musical, all that. I did a lot of 10 Broadway shows, smaller parts, all that, slowly bigger. But the thing that happened is that, oh, gosh, how do I lose my thread? What am I trying to get to, Harry?
Well, I don't know.
Well, not being typecast as Dolly Levi, but being able to do other roles afterwards as Carol Channing.
Thank you. I was in a little review, and the critics, all the critics in New York, every year they vote for the most promising young, actor, mm-hmm. And I won it again and again, and I thought I'd never come to fruition. The most promising young actor. When am I going to get out of being promising? You know.
I'll bet you wouldn't mind winning it again, though. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. What?
Oh, no, I joked. I said, I bet you wouldn't mind winning it again. Wouldn't that be lovely if you won that again? Best newcomer, you know, that'd be sweet.
Oh, I'm glad you said that.
That's so funny.
But it is, I'd like to win the most promising young for my next show.
That'll
be 3 months from now until I'm 90, and I haven't matured completely yet.
Are you able to... I mean, you really seem like you have the stamina and the energy. I don't know if you could do 8 shows a week on a Broadway thing, but would you ever consider or be able to do like a 4-time-a-week specialty thing, like a Barbara Cook sort of a thing, or that's not a possible thing anymore?
Cook, we adore each other.
I think I can answer that question probably as well as she can as I observe her, and that is, yes, she could. Providing there were a day between to kind of grab her breath again.
Right.
But she is as active. She has more stamina than certainly I do. When we were in New York City and Brooklyn, traveling through all that traffic, she did 23 appearances doing exactly what she's doing with you.
Wow.
In many cases. with television in 3 days. Now, that's a tremendous, tremendous emotional and, you know, and on the fourth day, she met with the Theater Guild in the morning, and in the afternoon, she was recording a documentary, which is going to be out fairly soon, which is going to be a great documentary of her life, and she did about 4 hours of that in the afternoon, and she was just getting started. So her stamina is something that I think most of us would envy.
Yes.
And, of course, I come back totally depleted. You know, I need it. Hey, in fact, I made a new rule. You do 2 days, I get 1 day off. You do 2 days of this stuff, you know, all day long, 12 hours. Like, yeah, just the other day, she did 12 hours.
Good
morning. We got up at 9 o'clock in the morning, traveled to Los Angeles. She did 5 appearances, television and all, radio and so forth. And then we were, you know, 11 o'clock by the time we got in bed that night.
See, what happens is that you get to thinking, what happens is that you, if you get sick, interestingly enough, I want to tell you about this.
Sure.
If you get sick and you go to bed, you get much sicker, thinking about everybody saving their money, saving his money,
babysitters,
travel time, yes, and they travel to
the money they pay,
and all that, and they save their money, and I'm not there. After they finally get to the theater, because Hello Dolly was going for $500 a ticket, and I'm not there, you get much sicker lying in bed, much sicker. Don't do it. Go get there, and so I get there, and you know, it's the funniest thing. You reach to the ovarian cancer, and the doctor is standing in the wings, Dr. Cahan, and you reach to the heavens to get the show out, and by gosh, the heavens answer you. They really do. And you get, you know what's interesting? When you, somehow the heavens answer you, and that show that you're particularly sick on, that's your best performance.
Well,
and I tell the audience now, I tell the students of master classes, that's your best performance. The one that you couldn't get out. But you had to do it because you couldn't disappoint them and not be there. You get, it's selfish. I get sicker when I'm lying in bed thinking of all of them. Oh, my God. So do the show. If you're a secretary, type the letter. It'll be the best, flawless letter you ever wrote. And you will do the best work no matter what your work is.
Can I give you an example?
Please.
Can I give you?
Please do. Harry Kalajian. Yes.
Yes, let me give you an example. Carol did a what they call the Actors Fund, a show in Los Angeles, and Angela Lansbury was coming down one set of stairs. Carol was coming down another set of stairs on the opposite side of the stage, and the lights were just spotlight. The stairs were totally black.
Oh.
You see the stairs. And she fell down the stairs. Carol fell all the way down the stairs. And she broke her arm, broke her ribs, had a huge gash on her head that they had to stitch. They rushed her to the emergency hospital, and they were wondering what they were going to do with the act. The following night at the Actors Fund, that same thing, and with Carol absent. And would you believe it, that with a sling on her broken arm or broken rib, and all the damage she had done on her head, but she stitched it up, she was there.
Well, actually, thank you for telling that story, because there's something I kind of want to clarify, and it plays to my ignorance. I don't mean it as an insulting question at all, but I did read that, Carol, you're a Christian Scientist, are you not?
My father was a lawyer, and he graduated from Brown University, summa cum laude, which is amazing for a poor boy growing up in Augusta, Georgia. But he, he was a lawyer for the Christian Science Movement, and that's when he would go to legislature and come home and say, achievement, as he came in, a great big man. Open the front door, we got the bill through. Well, he made me feel achievement was the greatest thing in life, and it is.
Oh, no, but my question is, I'm sorry, but my question was just about, I believe... Oh, so you can go to a hospital, you're not, you know, that's not a problem for you.
I think the fact that her background was Christian Science, and I believe also that her commitment and her dedication to her work, which is the profession of making, lifting the lives of people, you put those two together, mm-hmm. and you've got one of the most committed people that you'll ever find on the face of this earth. Here's another story for you. She has ovarian cancer and she's on the road. So every week she has to go to New York and have her X-ray or whatever the treatment is. Yeah, and so as she's doing her shows, I mean, she's in Colorado, and on the weekend she would fly back to New York, have her treatments or whatever the treatments were the doctor were giving for ovarian cancer, and fly back. Now, that's commitment. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's saying, I'm going to do it no matter what.
That's my religion.
Is.
Right now, it has been. That's my religion. Reach to the heavens to get your work out, and boy, you will do much better work.
But you're also known, I think, for many, many years, that you keep a very, very strict diet, unless I'm mistaken. You were very organic and macro way back before everybody was. Am I right about that?
I'm allergic to so many things, I don't know.
She is not. You're absolutely right. You know, most of the time I have to prepare the meals, and I'm going to say it's difficult at me because I never did much of that in my lifetime. But in any case, I prepare one set of food for myself, and I got to, you know, I have to, because she can eat a whole head of cauliflower raw or a whole head of lettuce raw, and she got a great diet. And she's a very healthy girl.
Yes, lots of fish.
I sure don't mind my calling you a girl.
Oh, I'm sure she doesn't.
Yeah, I'm your girl. Yeah.
Aw. Yeah. We are talking with Carol Channing and her husband, Harry Kalajian. Do you have a couple more minutes with us? Can you spare?
Go.
Okay. it is noon here, by the way, at the University of Northern Colorado. I'm Dave Leftwich. You're listening to Dave's Gone By. And as I said, we have the legendary, the one and only, Carol Channing. We've just been asking her all sorts of questions, as well as, of course, getting her message out about the importance of art in schools and bringing art to students and kids. We're not forgetting that, but I also wouldn't want to miss this opportunity to be asking Carol and her husband about their life together, her life in the theater, her amazing career. As a matter of fact, there was a little news story about a year or two ago in which Johnny Depp expressed interest in playing you in your biography in a movie. Do you think that's ever going to come to some sort of fruition?
We're trying to get him. See, the Magic Castle in Los Angeles is very well known in many circles, and the Magic Castle are going to be producing the telethon. And he's on that board of directors of the
Magic Castle. I've never met him.
Yeah, he's in Hollywood.
But I'm going to.
So we've been calling him. I've been trying to reach him to be a part of the telethon, you see.
Uh-huh.
And he's so busy probably in Europe making a film, we haven't been able to contact him. And we don't know. I know he Carol responded to his thoughts, which was to someday make a motion picture because he loves Carol so much. And so we don't know. Just don't know.
There are people who even say that on some level his version of, I think it was Willy Wonka, was slightly based on Carol in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or whatever the remake was called.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little something to that. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
I never heard of it.
Yeah, you did watch it, but you didn't.
Oh, I watched it.
Yeah.
Can I ask Carol, if you had to pick another role besides Dolly, and let's say besides Lorelai Lee, that you loved doing that we might not realize or remember or think, oh, that one, what would it be?
Well, I did 9 different characters in Len De Niro, Little Review. Oh, was that fun. Oh, for me, that was great. I played every kind of, every language, every, and that's my work. Everybody to his own sphere. But that's my work, is Review, in which you change character for each sketch that you're in, or song, or whatever. And it was one of the sketches that Anita Loos saw and said, that's my Lorelai Lee for Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. But it was only one of them. Gee, I sound braggadocious.
No, you're welcome to sound as braggadocious as you please. You've earned it. Many times over.
I thought I'd never come to fruition. They kept voting for me for the most promising young.
Well, you didn't ask the question that Carol would have loved to have done the motion picture Hello, Dolly.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, I assume there are no bad feelings after all these years, but it must have felt pretty... It must have been a tough blow when Barbara Streisand got the gig and you did not.
I was in Canada at the time I heard it. The Queen Elizabeth Hotel on the 18th floor, I'll never forget. And I was called and said, no, you're not going to do the movie. It's going to be Barbara Streisand. And I thought, all I have to do is lean a little further out this window and this pain will stop. It'll be all over. I won't feel the deep loss. The life came out of me. And I thought, that's all I have to do. And then I realized, no. Go on doing what you're doing. Keep playing it. And just, but boy, I thought there's no way to end this pain.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, obviously, it may have been comforting to know ultimately you weren't alone in this situation. Everything from Audrey Hepburn getting the role in My Fair Lady, or even to a couple of years ago. I mean, you know who Cherry Jones is, this wonderful Broadway actress, and now probably known for television, too. And they didn't cast her...
You should have seen Andrews in My Fair Lady, the energy she had. She was here on the street where I live. Boy, she was mad at
Rex Harrison's Henry Higgins, yeah. I mean,
I played My Fair Lady, too, on the summer circuit.
Really? How did you like playing? How did you like playing Eliza Doolittle?
Oh, I'm fine.
Okay,
she had it. She had a Cockney accent, and so we kept it up. But Julie Andrews was monumental in it. On the stage, she projected to the third balcony. She was, boy, you can see how Eliza Doolittle got that way. How she. She surmounted all laws of growing from a cockney into a grand lady. She could do it. Oh, she was... I'm just crazy about her. And when we did Thoroughly Modern Millie, Julie came in on her first day off since Mary Poppins, held both my hands. I said, Julie, I wouldn't have talked the same way to the back of your stand-in. She said, I knew that. That's why I'm here. She held both my hands and said, you are, Muzzy, you are. If I were playing Muzzy, I would be. It would be me. But you are Muzzy, and you don't have to reach for her or anything. It says in the Bible, go into your closet and keep your channel open. She went into my closet. I said, after that scene, I said, Julie, I went into my closet, and I never had anybody else in my closet. You always go into your closet. Keep your channel open, the Bible says. And keep it open. You come out and you know who this character is. You know what this piece of art is that you're trying to create. And just go into... And I said, Julie, I wouldn't have been the same. Well, the international, I won the Golden Globes Award, which is even, to me, more important than the Academy Award, because, of course, I didn't win the Academy Award.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, congratulations on that, of course. And the point I was also going to be making about Sherry Jones is that she's a pretty famous Broadway actress, and yet when they wanted to make the movie of Doubt, for which she won one of her two Tony Awards, they went to Meryl Streep. You know, they didn't ask her, or you know, they had Meryl, so they got Meryl. So even now, even years and years later, where Broadway keeps churning out wonderful performers, they don't necessarily get to do the movie of the role that made them famous. It's unfortunate, you know?
Yes, and I'll never know why.
I guess, you know, movies cost so much money to make, and there's so much publicity involved, that they figure if you have a big star to open a movie, a big movie star, you can automatically count on making a certain amount of your money back immediately, as opposed to opening with someone that only New York would know. Maybe. I don't know. I really don't know. It's unfortunate. But
they got...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm nothing against Cherry Jones, nothing against anybody. That certainly Audrey Hepburn was lovely. She was wonderful.
Oh, so yeah. And one of the nice things, if you know, when you would do a musical movie, nobody had to dub your voice. When you sing, people would expect to hear Carol Chang singing. That's for sure.
Whoa, thank you.
You're very welcome. Can I ask, if you were to give advice to would-be young performers in musical theater and regular theater, aside from living clean and eating well and all that sort of thing, what would be some advice for getting through this whole thing of auditions and trying to be an actor and trying to do what you've done all these years?
Well, your eye is on lifting the audience's life, not on your life.
Hmm.
I can say, you don't lift your own life, but you can, you keep your mind on lifting their lives, and they are perfectionists.
Cool, I like that. I like that a whole lot. Now, do you have...
You're forcing it out of me. That's the thing. It's not for your own pleasure. Don't think of yourself.
Hmm.
Just keep in character, and that's all. Keep in the character you're putting.
And... Well, I think that is really, really wonderful advice. And, you know, it's just been such a delight to be talking with Carol Channing and with Harry Kalogian. Let's remind people that they're going to be in, Carol, I guess your husband travels with you pretty much all the time, as long as he gets his days off. Is that true?
I guess your husband travels with you. Harry's trying... Explain to him what you're doing.
Yes, we travel
to David.
Absolutely, we're tied together, and I'm there for her, arranging. I'm her manager. I'm her director. Yes, that's what I do. It's just totally a new career for me. I started this in 1983. When I was 83. I'm sorry, 2003
uh-huh.
when we got married.
I tease him. He's a canny, crafty, cagey Armenian. And he looked after me when he was 13 years old. And girls never forget their first loves. Never.
That's so sweet. Yeah. But I want to just remind everybody that if they want to see Carol Channing in Colorado, I think I have the right date. October 23rd, you will be doing a master class in Fort Collins at CSU. Unfortunately, it's not at UNC. I don't know why we can't get you to the University of Northern Colorado. We'd love to have you here, but you're in a rival class. And of course, we'd love to get you to be in person at the radio station. I mean, I think that would just be, you know, if you ever get a chance.
David, you're so penetrating. You ask such good questions that I've never been asked before. I will be there if you want me in your studio.
Well, of course we do. If we can arrange it, it would be this incredible honor. We would be honored. So maybe Harry and you and I can work it out and get it done. It would be great.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that. God willing, we'll get you to Greeley, Colorado, which is not that far from Fort Collins. It's about 45 minutes, you know, and we'll get you here if we can. That'd be wonderful.
Yes. Okay, now Harry seems to feel I've got to get off the phone.
Yeah, well, it's been, I would keep you here for hours, but I know you have to go. But I want to thank you so very, very much, both of you.
Thank you, David.
And
thank you.
And you have a website, right, where people can buy your CD and find out more about the places that you're going to be and all the things you're doing, yes?
The patriotic one, that's the one I get thrilled with. Or the one songs my father taught me, what's the name of that?
For Heaven's Sake.
Oh, For Heaven's Sake, okay.
So, yeah, those are the two CDs, but can they go to, like, carolchang.com and buy them and see them and all that stuff?
.org,
sorry.
Yeah.
CarolChang.org. Well, Carol, Harry, thank you for making my weekend. Thank you for making one of the best moments I've ever had in radio. I expect to see you guys in Greeley, Colorado soon. I think that would be really wonderful.
My dear brand new best friend, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful weekend. Oh, well, Carol, can you just, I hate to do this, and this is the thing that everybody asks you to do, but can you give us just a little snatch of, little bitty snatch of Hello, You Know What?
Oh, sure. Hello, David. Well, hello, David. You see, Harry thinks that Jerry Herman wrote this song for him. Hello, Harry. Well, hello, Louie. It's so nice to be back home where I belong. You're looking swell, Manny. But Harry loves the song. He feels, but long before Jerry Herman met him, he wrote Hello, Dolly for Harry.
Yes.
Well, I think Jerry Herman wrote it for everyone in the universe. That's what I really think. He wrote it for everybody. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Yes. Thank you. I'm sorry?
Yes. Bye-bye, David, dear. And bye-bye, your Joyce. Bye-bye, Joyce.
Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you soon.